We'll hold him to Zion Amud Aleph, first line of the medium sized lines. The Mishnah had said, call him a stack of a dollar devotim. Anybody who contemplates, and a stack of literally means gazes at. So a person who gazes at or contemplates four things, which we said are malamaila malamata, what is above and below the what is above and below the universe, what is above and below the Nivroim that Hashem created, malafonim malachar, we said what was before and what was in the back, which we said in the Mishnah that Rashi, there was Rashi and then there was a Tosfos within Rashi that had two possibilities, and so the regular Tosfos also discusses, doesn't mean what was before and doesn't mean what's behind each side of the Rakia, of the sky, the space that surrounds the earth. Or so does it mean, in other words, spatially, what's before and behind, or does it mean what's before and what's after, what existed before Hashem created the world and what is going to exist after it? Anyway, so we said in the Mishnah, anybody who contemplates those four things, it would be rachmanos on him if he hadn't come into the world, because these kinds of contemplations and thoughts are likely to bring him to thoughts of apikorsis. So the Gemara says, "Vishlema mala 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 mata mala ocher lechaya." I can understand the person is asking about what's above the chayis hakodesh and what's below them. So above them is Hashem's throne, kaviyachol, and atzmos b'horus. So mala mata and what's behind, and what's below, meaning what's below the earth. In particular, we talked about the other day, the idea that the whole world, the whole universe is supported, so to speak, by the arm of Hashem. So what are you going to say? What's below that? Like what supports Hashem? That would lead a person to have curses. So we can understand that. And mala ocher, and what's going to be after the world ceases to exist. Also, l'chaye, I can understand what the problem with all those things. El lefonim, but what's the problem with asking what existed before the world? Ma dehava hava, what was, what's the difference? If you contemplate what was there or not. So Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Elazar, both say, Moshal melech bosav adam, it's like a melech bosav adam, sha'omal avodav, he tells his servants, b'nuli paltu negdolin ala ashba, go build me a big palace on top of the garbage heap. So obviously they have to clear away the garbage heap and then they build the palace. So the king doesn't want that in the future people should say this palace was built on top of that garbage heap. It's disrespectful. And the same way, in other words, you're going to talk about what there was or wasn't, as the case may be, before the world, then it's like you're mentioning the garbage that was there before, which is not respectful to Hashem. Now, Marsha points out, I mean, the world was created yesh me'ayin, so it's not really exactly the same thing as over there. There was a garbage heap, and then we're saying instead that was cleared away to build the world. Here we're not talking about there was an actual garbage heap, because it's yesh me'ayin, but nevertheless, you're going to start thinking about the ayin, and it's still a bit of a zilzal in Hashem. You're going to start thinking that there wasn't an ayin, that there actually did exist something there before the world was created. There's a couple of other explanations as well, one of them being that we're talking about, that Ramban talks about in his Pirush on Chumash, the idea that there was, Hashem created what's called Chomer Hiyuli, like a primordial stuff, matter, from which he then created the whole world. So you start thinking about what that was, and it's not something that we can understand with our senses, because we're only familiar with matter that's formed into something. So therefore, so a person is going to end up thinking about that and start coming up with wrong ideas about what existed before the world, and maybe Hashem himself was created, Chas v'Shalom, or maybe there was another, maybe the world has always existed, like some Greek philosophers thought, et cetera, et cetera. So these are dangerous kinds of things. So therefore, a person is not supposed to do that. There's an interesting idea, actually, that Moshe Feinstein brings about this in his Chidushim on this Masechta. He says the idea is also like this: how do we realize the greatness of Hashem? So we can realize by the fact that Hashem created Yesh Me'ayin. But we have much better ways of realizing the greatness of Hashem. We talked about before all the malachim that serve Hashem, and you can realize how great they are compared to us, and therefore how great Hashem is, that he's far beyond them. We can look at the natural world that the Eibishter created and see how well it functions and everything, and learn the greatness of Hashem from that. So for a person to say, well, I can't be bothered. The Malachim, big deal. The Nivroim, big deal. You know what I'm impressed about, that Hashem created the world, Yesh Me'ayin. So it shows a lack of respect for Hashem. Like as if that's the only thing that we can credit Hashem for.
On the other hand, you can question why did Hashem create the world the way he did it, that he gave us the perception that we understand that he is omnipresent everywhere. He could have created a world like a box, and we wouldn't even have any idea of what really the there is a world.
Fair enough. I mean, Hashem could have done it all kinds of ways. I mean, ultimately, we know that Sabah HaKadosh Baruch Hu is legitimate Hatonim. So Hashem created a world where El Akus is concealed almost to the ultimate degree. That's what we said the other day, that Hashem had to say, there's enough Tzimtzumim. The world is now at a point where, on the one hand, El Akus is concealed, but on the other hand, where it can be revealed within our world. And then that's the world where Hashem wants us
to. How do you know there's El Akus in this world?
How do we know there's Elokus in the world? I mean, we can see there are things that scream Elokus to us. You look at a Chefetz.
That's what I'm saying. That's Hashem designed them on purpose. So we should know that he is the creator. But he could have created the world in a way that we wouldn't notice even there's a creator.
That's true. And that's the point. In other words, that's what we mean when we say Sha'om Eloi Lo Medai, that Hashem stopped that continuous tzimtzumim at a certain point, because otherwise the world would be the existence of Hashem would be completely impossible for us to discover. Indeed,
So there is truth in the fact that he created the world the way it is, and that it's good for us to try and seek to understand what the world is about.
The Mishnah is warning us is there's a certain point beyond which you can't go. That's what we had before in the story of Rabbi Akiva and the four Chachamim, where Rabbi Akiva realized how far he can go, whereas the other Chachamim did not. So yeah, that's what the Mishnah is telling us. Delve in as much as you can with the brain that the Eibishter gave you, and with the things in Torah that the Eibishter gave us to understand these things, but realize there's a point beyond which you're not going to be able to penetrate.
We're not talking about space and science, are we here?
So Ruchnistic realities as well. I mean, we talk about, you know, ultimately, for example, there was a tzimtzum, Oliver Tzoyne, that it came up in the Eibishter's simple will to create a world. And we can delve into, and thousands of pages of Chassidus talk about what the nature of Rotzin is and why Hashem wanted the world and so forth. But ultimately, you know, wherever we go, we ultimately come up against something that this is the way the Eibishter wanted it. And that's it. Even, for example, that Rotzin we talk about, that Rotzin is something that only if you're the Baal HaRotzen himself can you understand that, and we're not. As they wrote about in Sifrei Chakira, and therefore there comes a point when there comes a point beyond which we can't ask why did Hashem have this Rotzen and why did Hashem do such and such. Ultimately, the answer has to be Loi Machshava Yisem Achkezechem. That's what we're saying. We go as far as we can with that, but we have to know that there's a point where there is a point at which we have to stop. All right, let's go on. The Mishnah said, "Kol shalei chos al kavod koinei." Anybody who does not have regard for the kavod of Hashem, rosu lo shalei bala olam. It would have been a rachmanos on him if he hadn't come into the world. So, mayhi, what do we mean by not having kavod for Hashem? What, not caring about Hashem's kavod? Rab Abba Omer zamistak of keshes. Rab Abba says that this refers to somebody who looks at or gazes at the rainbow. The rainbow, we said before, is used as a metaphor in the pasuk for the appearance of Hashem's Shechina, and therefore, as Gemara is going to quote it now, and therefore, a person who looks at the rainbow is showing a lack of regard for the kavod of Hashem. So that's one. There is actually a sicha where they never talked about the idea behind that is that. the rainbow, when you look, if you contemplate the rainbow too much, you're going to start thinking, this is an example of what we're talking about Hashem's thinking. Before the Mabul, Hashem was ready to say that, before the Mabul, Hashem was saying, I'm going to destroy the whole world and all of humanity because of what they're doing. After the Mabul, we're saying, Hashem is saying, I'm willing to give them a chance. What causes that Hashem should change that kind of thing? That kind of thing is showing a bit of a lack of respect for Hashem, as if like we can understand how Hashem thinks before and after. So that's one. Rabbi Yosef Amazel over Avera Basesa. Rabbi Yosef says that it refers to somebody who does an Avera in secret, because like he's showing as if like I'm not going to do it in public because I'm afraid of what people are going to say, but I'm going to do it in secret because I don't care that Hashem sees me. So Mistakov Akeshes, why would somebody who looks at the rainbow be showing a lack of respect for Hashem? Dichtiv Kemare Akeshes Ashiya Ba'onan B'yem Agoshem. As the Pasuk says, like the appearance of the rainbow that appears in the clouds on a rainy day, Kein Mare Hanoga Saviv, that was a semblance of the glory around Hashem. Hu Mare Dmus Kvod Hashem, this is the appearance of the image of the glory of Hashem. So therefore, the rainbow is like, to a certain extent, the semblance of Hashem's Shechina, and therefore it's disrespectful to look at it at length. You look at it briefly to make the bracha, but you don't stare at it. Rabbi Yosef Amazal over Avera Basesa. Rabbi Yosef says it refers to somebody who does an Avera in secret. And that would be like what Rabbi Yitzchak said. The Amr Rabbi Yitzchak, kol over avera baseiser kilu doichet ragle shchina. Anybody who is over an avera in secret is as if he's pushing away the feet of the shchina. Shenema koyama Hashem. Hashem says, "Hashemayim kisi va'oret adrim ragloi." The heavens are my throne. The earth is my footstool. The Shechina doesn't have feet, of course not, but we talk about Hashem in human terms, and what it means is, in other words, that we can talk about that the world is like the lowest thing relative to Hashem, like the feet are the lowest part relative to the body. And therefore, in other words, when a person is doing an Aveda in secret, it's like as if he's saying Hashem is not here. Hashem is the Shechina is not here, and the earth is like the footstool, so to speak, where the Shechina's feet rest. And therefore, it's like he's saying the Shechina is not here to see what I'm doing. I can do whatever I want. So therefore, he's not showing respect for Hashem by doing that. So the Gemara says, "Eini, is that so?" The Amr of Ila Hazaken, Im Roya Adam Sheyitzru Misgaber Olav. If a person sees that his Yetzahara is overpowering him, Yelach L'Mokum Shein Makirinoi. So he should, we learned it in Moed Katan as well. He should go to a place where they don't recognize him. The Yuba Shchurin V'Isatif Shchurin. He should wear black clothes and wrap himself in black clothes. In those times, that was a simon of Avelus and of humility. The Yasa Masha Libe Chopet, and then do whatever he wants, rather than making a Chilul Hashem by doing the Aveira in public. Now, we learned in Moed Katan, and over here also Tosfos talks about it. There's two ways of understanding what the Gemara is saying. Is Rab Ila Hazokin saying that at that point you're allowed to do the Aveira? So Tosfos brings from Aben Hananel, that absolutely not. Of course not. No, you don't ever have permission to do an Aveda. What it means is, once the person does that, he goes to some place where nobody knows him and he wears black clothes like that, then we can be pretty well certain that he's not going to do Avedas anymore because his heart is humbled. He feels bad by that. He's living in a strange place. He doesn't know the people over there. He's wearing clothes like that. So that itself is likely to break his stubbornness and make that now in the future he's not going to do that Aveda. On the other hand, Tosfos says, from all Gemara, it seems to imply that we do after all mean that we're talking about he maybe even let him do the Aveda, but at least the least worst option, because at least he's not making a Chilul Hashem with it. So it's two different ways of understanding the Gemara. Anyway, the point is, it seems though that Rav Ila is saying that there are that if a person does an Aveda in secret, is not as bad as doing it with a Hesia. Whereas before we were saying just the opposite. It shows a lack of respect for Hashem. And the answer is, like Kasha, it depends whether he's able to control his Yetzirah. Then, of course, he shouldn't do the Aveda in secret either. And if he does, it's showing disrespect for Hashem, because he's showing that I don't care that Hashem sees me as long as other people don't see me. Whereas if he's in a situation where he can't control his Yetzirah has gotten too much the better of him, then at least the least worst thing is for him to do the Aveda in secret rather than in public. Obviously, you know, this to come to a point like Loi Matzikayef Leyitzre itself shows that he's way far down. It shows that itself he needs to work on himself and be able to, you know, we had fairly recently, for example, in Tanya, that the Alter Rebbe gives many different strategies for dealing with the Yetzer Hara. But the bottom line is, we're saying there can be a case where doing it for Seser is not as bad as doing it for Hasya, because at least he's going to do the Aveda either way. At least he's not making a Chilul Hashem in the process. All right. Continues the Gemara. Dorash Rabbi Yehuda Barab Nachmeni Miturgamone de Rish Lakish. Rabbi Yehuda Barab Nachmeni, who was the Miturgamon, he was the interpreter of Rish Lakish when Rish Lakish would give his shiurim. So he himself, this Rabbi Yehuda Barab Nachmeni himself, was a Talmud Chacham. We want to know who he is. We want to know whether the fact that he was associated with Rish Lakish, but he himself was a great Talmud Chacham. It does many times it says what a person's job is. Yeah. So he said, Kolam is stack of a gimel dvarim, a person who looks at any of the following three things, Einav Kehois, his eyes will go dim. Bakeshes uvanosi uvakoyen. The rainbow, the nosi, and specifically actually it's brought someplace that it means specifically when the nosi is judging a din Torah, and the Kohenim when they're Duchenim. So Bakeshes, which is why we cover our faces with the talus during Duchenim. Bakeshes, how do we know that the rainbow? Dichtiv, because we said before, Kamari Akeshes Ashiyah Ba'onan B'yem HaGoshem, like the appearance of a rainbow that appears in the cloud on a rainy day, Hu Marid Mus Kvod Hashem, this is the appearance of the semblance of Hashem's covered. So therefore, in other words, we see that Hashem's Shechina in some way or other appears in the rainbow, and therefore to stare at it makes a person's eyes go dim. Because it's something that he shouldn't be looking at. The Nasi, because we find when Moshe appoints Yeshua as the next leader of the Jewish people, which is the Nasi, the Pasuk says, "V'na satam eihodcha olav," you should put from your glory on him, meaning in other words, some of the glory of the Shechina went on to Yeshua, and more generally, it goes into every Nasi after that, and therefore to stare at him, it, in particular, like I said, what it says is when he's judging a Din Torah, then causes the person's eyes to go dim.
What about any other time,
then the pashtus nothing. He doesn't have the Shechina on him as much, because we find, for example, the Shechina is particularly there when the Beis Din is judging a case, the Kimnitza Vadat Keil, and therefore more than other times, then you have the Shechina is resting on him, and therefore to stare at him would be inappropriate. You have, by the way, you find that many times, I don't know if they do this nowadays, but many times, Rabbonim, actually, when they were judging a Din Torah, they would actually cover their face with a talus. Practically speaking, that was probably part of it, was in order that they're not distracted and in order not to let, they're not looking at the faces of Bali Din, and they may favor one of them over the other, but it may have also been related to this idea over here. Anyway, and the third thing is a mistake of a Kohenim, specifically Bizman Shabes Mikash Yokayam, when the Bes Mikash was standing, Shoyomdin al Duchonon, they were standing by the Duchon and the Bes Mikash, Umvochan as Yisrael, Bashem Mufurdash. And they were blessing the Jewish people, Birkas Kohenim, with the Shema Mefodosh, then the Shechina rested on their hands, and then to look at their hands would make a person's eyes grow dim. Tosfos points out that we did learn in Masechta Megillah a couple of months ago that Rashi had pointed out over there we talk about over there cases where a person has deformities, a Kohen has deformities on his hands, or paint, or dye, or whatever on his hands, and the problem is that people are going to look at him, and Rashi said over there, because we're saying over here, ain't of chaos. Tosfos says, what do you mean? We're saying over here only when the business is standing. So what Tosfos explains is like this. You're not supposed to look at them even nowadays because of Hesach Adat. You're going to get distracted from listening to the words of Birkas Kohenim and concentrating on them. But, so that's why, in that Mishnah over there, it says that if they have deformities or dye or whatever on their hand, then they're not supposed to do it. Nowadays, if they cover their hands with the talus, and we cover ourselves with the talus, then it's not really an issue. But, when the Beis Mikdash was standing, then in fact, then the person would, when the Beis Mikdash was standing, then in fact, then looking at them would make your eyes grow dim. So in short, Tosfos is saying, nowadays you shouldn't look at them, not because the Shechina is on their hands, because of the Hetzach Hadas, in the Beis Mikdash you shouldn't be looking at them because of the Shechina is on their hands. The Shechina is not on their hands nowadays, at least not to the same extent that it would make a person's eyes grow dim. No, not other times in the Beis Mikdash, just specifically when they're doing
it. Like in the Kodesh HaKadoshim?
No, well, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, nobody's seen them anyway. The Kohen Gadol was there by himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. This that I said before about the Nasi, when he's judging, this is the Kolba, he says that. Okay. Anyway, continues the Gemara. Here's another thing that the same Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Nachmani, the Meturgamon of Rish Lakish, also taught the following statement. My dichtiv, what does it mean? A positive. Al ta'aminu bereya, don't trust in a friend. Al tibtchu ba'aluf, don't rely on the leader. So we're going to understand that the reya over here means the Yetzahara, and aluf, the leader, means Hashem. Means im yoyim alcho yetzahara chatoi. If the yetzahara tells you it's okay, do an avera, ba'akadosh baruch hu moichel, and don't worry, Hashem will forgive you. So al tamen, don't believe in him, don't trust him, and say okay, I'll do the avera, and later on Hashem will, forgive me. Don't trust in that. Shenema al tamen bereya. Now the word reya is written in the pasuk reish ayin, and therefore we can read it as if it said ra, the one who is bad, meaning the yetzahara. So ve'en ra el yetzahara. The word ra means the yetzahara. Shenema ki yetz leva adam ra, as the pasuk says, the inclination of a person's heart is ra, is evil. So don't listen to the ra. Ve'en aluf el HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The word aluf, the leader, means Hashem. Shenema aluf ne'urai yalta. As the pasuk says, that the Jewish people say to Hashem, you are my leader since my youth, since the beginning of my nationhood. So therefore, so in other words, the pasuk is saying, "Al ta'aminu bereya." Don't trust what the ra, the yetzahara, is telling you. Do the avera, and it's okay. Hashem will forgive you. Al tibtchu ba'aluf. Don't trust. Don't rely on the aluf, on Hashem, to forgive you and say that he's going to be moichel. Don't do the avera in the first place. Obviously, if you did the avera, then you do tshuva. But we're talking about don't like the Gemara says in Yuma. Don't say echt of oshu. Don't say I'll do the avera. Don't say, I'll do the Avera, and I'll do Tshuva afterwards. So don't rely on that. Shema Toma Mi Meidi, you're going to say, okay, so I do an Avera in secret. Who's going to be able to say Eidos against me? Well, the answer is Avne Besa, the Kodesh Besa, Shalodam, Hein Meidin Bay. The stones and the beams of a person's house will give Eidos on him of what he did. Nowadays that you have security cameras, then we can actually realize that it's much easier to realize that concept. But we're saying that even before they existed, then they can give Eidos on him in front of Hashem. Because you can see that you're
doing that.
Yeah. Shenema, as the pasuk says, ki even mikiu tizak. The pasuk says a stone will cry out from the wall. V'chofis me'et ya'anena, and a beam of wood will reply to it. From the beam of wood will reply to it. So in other words, they're going to cry out and reply about the averus that a person did in their house. The Chum say differently. A person's own neshama will give edus against him in front of Hashem for the averus that he did. Shenema, as the pasuk says, it's actually the continuation of the pasuk that we said before. Al ta'aminu bereya, al tibtchu ba'aluf. The same pasuk continues. Mishecheves chekecha shmur pischepicha. From the one that lies in your lap, guard the openings of your mouth. And Ezo Yidavah, Shechevis, Bechekah Shaladam, what is it that lies in a person's lap and is constantly with him? Heveyem, Ezo Neshama, that means his Neshama. So his Neshama will be the one that testifies against him to Hashem. Rav Zrika, Amar Rav Zrika says a third thing, Shnei Malachi Asharis, Hamalav and Oisei, Hein Me'edin Boi. The two Malachi Asharis that accompany a person all the time, they are the ones who will give Eidos on what he did. Shenema, ki malachim yitzav alach, as the pasuk says, Hashem will command his malachim to you, l'shmarcha v'chol derechecha, to guard you in all of your ways, which actually has a double meaning. It means, in other words, they'll protect you, he'll command them to be with you for the good, and l'shmarcha, to guard you about what you're doing not so good, v'chol derechecha, and everything that you do, and they are the ones who then can give aids. And then we have another opinion, the chachamim say, on the side over here, it says the yeshayimrim. We look at this in Tainus as well. A vodav shall adam be eaten by a person's own limbs with which he did the various averus. That's what's going to testify against him. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Atem edai ne'um Hashem." The pasuk says, "You plural are my edim," says Hashem. "Vani keil and I am Hashem." So the atem is referring to you plural is referring to the person's own limbs that are going to that are going to. Testify in front of Hashem about what the person did. Okay. The Mishnah says, so now we're continuing on. We had digressed at the end of the previous perek and the beginning of this perek to talk about various other topics that are not directly related to Masechta Chagiga. Now we're getting back to the topic of the Masechta, which is the Korbanos that we bring on Yom Tov. Now, so you're bringing these Korbanos on Yom Tov. So now usually when you bring a korban, usually when you're bringing an oila or a shlomim, you usually do smicha on it. So now that we're going to discuss this matter of smicha on the korban. So the Mishnah says, Yosi ben Ya'ezer, Yosef ben Ya'ezer, whatever, Omer Shaloi Lismach. This was the very first machloikas that persisted among the Jewish people, where the Nasi and the Avestin in subsequent generations, as we're going to go on over here, argued about this one halacha, whether to do smicha on the korban on Yom Tov or not. We're going to discuss in the Gemara a few different possible reasons behind the machloikas. So Yosi ben Ya'ezer and Yosi ben Yochanan had this machloikas, and it persisted throughout the following generations, all the way down to Hillel and Shammai. But then the reason behind the machloikas, the pashtus, when they had the machloikas, the reason was clear to them. But now it did. But then in later times, by the time of the Amoraim, it wasn't as clear, and we're going to have different opinions about it on Omer Beis. So Yosef ben Ya'ezer Omer Shaloi Lismach, he said you should not lean on the korban on Yom Tov for reasons that we're going to talk about on Omer Beis. Yosef ben Yochanan Omer Lismach. Yosef ben Yochanan, who was the Av Beis Din, says that you should do this smicha. In the next generation, they had the same machloikas again. By the way, Tosfos points out they had machloikas in before that as well. For example, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that Shaul and David had a machloikas about certain dinim of Kiddushin. The reason why we're saying this is the first machloikas, this is the first one that persisted. Tosfos, what it says is that since Shaul and his Beis Din were the ones who held one way, and the only one who argued was David, that can't really be called machloikas. Machloikas would be when you have a substantial number of the Chachamim arguing and they can't resolve it. You only had David, had his opinion, and everybody else disagreed with him. But so that kind of machloikas they had, if you were there, but then you go to the Beis Din and Gadol, and they resolve it. You were the first one where they had a machloikas that they couldn't resolve because there were many chachamim. When we say Yosef ben Ya'ezer and Yosef ben Yochanan, we mean not just them, we mean many of their talmidim took one side and many of them took the other side, and they couldn't resolve it. You have to realize also in the time of Yosef ben Ya'ezer and Yosef ben Yochanan, that is the time that they lived at the time when the Greeks were ruling over Eretz Yisrael. This is the period before and after the Nes Chanukah. So times were bad. There was all the Xeris and Shmodos and everything that the Greeks made. And apparently because of that, the Chachamim didn't have the time to be able to, the stability to be able to sit down and hash this out and come to a decision. In the next generation, they continued to have the same machlokes. Yeshua ben Prachya Omer Shaloi Lismach, Nitei HaAbeli Omer Lismach. In the second generation, you have the same machlokes between the Nasi and the Abbeis. In the third generation, Yehuda ben Taba Omer Shaloi Lismach, Shimon ben Shatach Omer Lismach. In the fourth generation, it flipped around. Shmaya Omer Lismach, Haptalion Omer Shaloi Lismach. In the fourth generation, Shmaya, who was the fourth of the fourth Nasi of the Zugas, he said to be Soymech. So he held the opinion that the Ovis based in of the previous generations had held, Aptalion, Omer Shaloi Lismach, and Aptalion took the position of the Nasiim of the previous generation and said not to do Snicha. Then the Mishnah continues, Hilul Menachem Loi Nechleku. Hilul Menachem Loi Nechleku. Hillel and Menachem, who was originally Hillel's, this Menachem was originally Hillel's Av Beis Din, they did not argue about it because Menachem remained as Av Beis Din only for a very short time. So they didn't have the chance for the Machlokas to be brought up during his tenure. Yotze Menachem Nichnas Shammai, then Menachem left, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara what it means he left, and Shammai came in as the new Av Beis Din. Now Shammai, Omer Shaloi Lismach, Hillel Omer Lismach, and Shammai continued like the Av Beis Din of the previous generation, like Aptalion, and said not to do smicha. Hillel Omer Lismach, and Hillel said yes, do smicha, like the Nasi, like Shmaya in the previous generation, and like the Ovis Beis Din in the previous generation. Tosfos wonders, by the way, now everyone said, how does Shoinim, the Mishnah continues, in each of these pairs, the first one that we listed, Hoyu Nasiim, the first one of each pair was the Nasi, Ushniim Lahem Av Beis Din. The one mentioned second is the Av Beis Din. So Tosfos wonders, in that case, what about this last pair over here? Shammai is the Av Beis Din, Hillel is the Nasi. Why is Shammai listed first? So Tosfos says, okay, because since in the first three pairs, the ones who said Shaloi Lismach were Nasiim, and Shammai holds like them, so therefore it mentions him first. And by the way, Tosfos says, once it mentions him first, then it mentions him first throughout the rest of Shas. We usually have Shammai mentioned before Hillel. On the other hand, there's different other explanations, one of them being because Hillel was particularly onav. We have the famous stories in Masechta Shabbos about how humble Hillel was, so therefore he's mentioned after Shammai, even though he was first. It may also be because Shammai lived his whole life in Eretz Yisrael. Hillel didn't. He came from Bavel at some point and moved to Eretz Yisrael, so therefore, like, Shammai was first, he wasn't first in the position. He said Menachem was, but he was one of the leading Chachamim of his times before Hillel ever showed up. But okay, anyway, Tosef says it's quite clear. We know, of course, that Hillel was the Nasi and Shammai was the Abbasin, so there's no way that we could confuse and say that it was the other way around. But now the question is going to be, the Gemara is going to discuss, as far as the third Zug, Yehuda ben Tabai and Shimon ben Shotach, which one was the Nasi, which one was the Abbasin? So the Gemara says, Tana Rabban, we learn in a Braisa, Shloshim Mizugis have shown him Sha'omer Shaloi Lismich. Of the first three pairs, the ones who said Shaloi Lismich don't do Smicha, Ushnaim Mizugis Achronim Sha'omer Lismich, and the last two Zugis, the one who said you should do Smicha on Yamdiv, Harishonim, Harunasim, Ushnaim Lam Ovis Bastin. So those five, in the first three, the ones who said not to be Smicha, and the last two groups, the ones who said to be Smicha, those were the Nasim. So Yosi ben Yezer, Yoshua ben Prachia, etc. And the ones mentioned, the other way around, the ones who said in the first three generations to be Somech, and the ones who said in the last two generations not to be, those were the obvious based in. So Yosef ben Yochanan and Niter HaBeili and so forth. Divir Reb Meir, that's what Reb Meir says. The Chum say, as far as the third pair, Yehuda ben Tabai, Abbasin, the Shimon ben Shatach Nasi. It's the other way around. They say Yehuda ben Tabai was the Abbasin, Shimon ben Shatach was the Nasi. So according to them, the first two pairs is the one mentioned first is the Nasi. So according to them, in the third pair in our Mishnah, when we said Harishonim, Hoyu Avos Beis Din, they would say it should be the other way around, that we should mention Shimon ben Shatach first. And he said to be Somech. So according to that, he would be the first Nasi who said to be Somech, unlike the two Nasiim before him who said not to. So the Gemara says, if you have a Machlokas, remember, Reb Meir and the Chachamim lived a couple hundred years later, so in their time, it wasn't clear which was which. So the Gemara says, Man Tana Laha de Tana Rabbanon. Well then, which of those Tanoim, the Meir or the Chachamim, is the Tana of the following Braisa? Omer of Yehuda ben Tabai, that in a Braisa of Yehuda ben Tabai says, Hagos HaGrua takes out the word Rebbe, because in those times, they didn't use the title Rebbe yet, that came in only later. So in those times, we said, Godom Rab and Shmoy, their name itself is greater than any title. Anyway, so he says, Ereb Nechama, may I see the Nechama of the Jewish people? In other words, it's a Lashon Shavua saying that if what I'm saying, that if what I'm about to say is not true, then I shouldn't get to see the Nechama of the Jewish people. But then Tosef points out it's like a short Lashon of a Shavua. You find even like that sometimes in Chumash. Anyway, the point is he's saying, I swear that the following statement is true. Now, by the way, Marsha points out, you know, when Yehuda ben Tabai's time, the Beis Hamikdash is still standing. Nevertheless, they knew they still need the Nechama. They're living in a time, fine, you know, the Jewish people are ruling over Eretz Yisrael, the Beis Hamikdash is standing. Nevertheless, they knew that they don't have the Geula HaMikdash Vashlema yet, and they knew that the Beis Hamikdash is yet going to be destroyed, and therefore therefore he's saying about the Nechama, about the ultimate Nechama of the Jewish people. So in other words, even in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, they knew they still need Mashiach. Anyway, so he says, "Ereb Nechama, im loy haragti eid zoynim." That if it's not true, in other words, it most certainly is true that I killed an eid zoynim. We know about eidim zoynim. They come to Beis Din, saying that Reuven did such and such an avera, let's say, for which he's chayiv misa, or not just chayiv misa, anything. Reuven owes Shimon X amount of money. Reuven gets malchus for such and such, whatever. Anyway, it turns out that they weren't there at the time. Other Edom come and say, Imanu Ayisem, you were with us someplace else. So then the rule is the Edom Zemmin get the punishment that they meant for the person. So misa, if it was misa, then misa, malchus, then malchus, etc. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai is saying that I killed an Ed Zemmin. Even though under normal circumstances this wouldn't have been a case where he's chayiv mitzah, but in order to deliberately demonstrate against the tzedukim, which in his times the tzedukim were quite powerful, they say the opposite of the halacha that we know, that the Edom Zemrin are executed only if the person that they tried to frame himself got executed. So they would say, in other words, only if Reuven got executed for breaking Shabbos, let's say, and then it turned out that they're Edom Zemrin, only then would we execute the Edom Zemrin. And we know it's the other way around, Kasha Zaman V'loy Kasha Osa. If Reuven actually got executed, then we don't execute the Edom Zemrin. Why that is a whole other topic. And that's the Shem, when we get to Masechta Makos a few years from now, we can discuss it. But in any case, that's the din. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda ben Taba is saying, I, Davke, in order to demonstrate against the Pesukim, in this particular case, I had the Edom Zemrin executed just to demonstrate that the Pesukim are wrong, and because it was before Reuven had been executed, therefore I had him executed. But Shimon ben Shattach says to him, on the other hand, you made a mistake. Ere b'nechama, may I see, or rather as a way of saying, may I not see the nechama of the Jewish people, im lo shafachta dam naki. If it's not true, in other words, it most certainly is true that you spilled innocent blood. Shari omru chachamim, because after all, the chachamim also said, ein edim zemin narogin ad shi yazumu shneihem. You only kill them, you only execute them, only if both of them are shown to be zemin. Only if the new edim that come say, imanu hayisem, they say, you were with us elsewhere, both of you. In this case, it's only one aid was, in only one, they had evidence, they had other edim that he had been elsewhere. So, and therefore, you can't execute him like that. The ein loikin ad shi yazumu shneihem, by the same token, if the Eid Zayman gets Malkus, then also you only do it if both of them have been Muzam, or only if both of them have been disproved because both of them were there. That were else.
Can you execute the only one who was you have proof against?
No, so that's the thing. That's what we're saying. Rav Shimon ben Shattach is telling him that Yehuda ben Taba, you made a mistake. There were two Eidim over here. So you have, let's say, for example, two Edim, we'll call them Shimon and Levi, came to Beis Din and said that Reuven was Mechal or Shabbos. Now, what happened? Two more Edim, we'll call them Yehuda and Yisachar, came and said that Shimon, the first aid, was elsewhere at the time and therefore he couldn't have seen this. So now, Yehuda ben Taba was saying, thought, given that Reuven hasn't been executed yet, we should Davka execute Shimon to demonstrate against Tzedukim. But Shimon Shattach says, fine, as far as that, you're correct. But on the other hand, the fact is, you also should have paid attention to the halacha that we can only do that only if Shimon and Levi were not there at the time. In this case, only Shimon was an Eid Zayman, Levi is not. So, in fact, there's an explanation, in fact, that Yehuda, obviously Yehuda ben Taba knew that halacha. So there's an explanation, in fact, from a Pirush called Menachem Meshiv Nefesh, who says that, of course, Yehuda ben Taba knew that halacha, but he thought as a Hiras Shah to demonstrate once and for all, not like the Tzedukim, he thought to do that. But Shimon Shattach is telling him, the fact is that, on the other hand, you kind of played into the Tzedukim's hands in another way, because they say that when the Pasuk says, Vasisim loy kasha samam, you should do to him as he plotted, they think it means that even one aid can be executed if he was the aid zonim, and the fact is the halacha is not, it's only if both them. So yes, you disproved the Tzedukim in one way, but by accident, you didn't realize that you're playing into their hands in another way. So Ve'en Meshamun Mamun Ad Sheyazumu Shneihem. And the same thing, even if it involves paying money. We don't say paying money, big deal, it's only money. We don't say that maybe if only one of them was Muzam. No, both of them have to be Muzam in order for it to take effect. From then on, Yehuda ben Taba right away accepted on himself that he's not going to ever pask in halacha except in the presence of Shimon ben Shattach, so that if he makes a mistake, then Shimon ben Shattach will be able to correct it. So the Gemara says, the Braisa continues, Kol Yomav Shol Yehuda ben Taba Hayim Shateach Al Kivrei Shol Oisei Harug. Throughout the rest of Yehuda ben Taba's life, he would go and fall on the ground by the kever of that person who had been killed, this Eid Zayman who had been killed, to ask Mechila for doing that. V'hoya koyle nishman, you could hear his voice from a distance crying. Kisvurina omloy meshakoyle shal horobu. People didn't realize that it's Yehuda ben Taba going there to act, to cry and to ask Mechila. They thought it's the dead person himself, that they're hearing his voice. Omolahem, but Yehuda ben Taba told them, koyle hu, you should know it's my voice. Teidu, and you can prove that it's my voice. Shalomachahu mesva in koyle nishman. Tomorrow, meaning at some point in the near future, he, meaning I, am going to pass away and you won't hear the voice anymore. So as soon as I pass away, you won't hear the voice. That shows that all, that will show you that all along it was my voice, not his. However, generations later, points out to Rav Ashi, that's not a very strong proof. The Duma Piyose Kaise, after all, that doesn't prove anything. Maybe after Yehuda Batabe passed away and goes to Beis Din Shamayla, then he appeases this person that he had killed, and finally the person is willing to be moichel him there. Oyba Dina Tabe, or maybe in fact the guy took him in front of the Beis Din Shamayla and got him judged. So obviously we can rely that Yehuda Ben Taba is saying, of course he's saying the truth, this is my voice, but Rav Acha Brei de Rabbe is pointing out that the proof that he was using is kind of a weak proof. Tosfos points out, by the way, the reason why he has to attribute it to when he dies, why can't he say, when I'm not there, then he won't hear me? Okay, because people would say, you know what, okay, only when you're around is he screaming out. But people would realize, on the other hand, when Yehuda Ben Taba passed away, his neshama is going to be up there in Gan Eden together with that guy. Then the guy will have all the more reason to cry out. And therefore, Yehuda Ben Taba tells them, the fact is, you won't then, because it's my voice rather than his. Okay, so now that we have that braisa, man. So now we had before the machlokas from Meir and the Chachamim, who was the Nasi and who was the Av Beis Din in that zug. So which opinion is this braisa like? Mani ho, who is it like? I'm at the Shlemer of Meir. If you say the Braisa goes according to the Meir, then it works well. He says Shimon and Shatach in that Zug was the Abbasin, and Yehuda Ben Tabai is the Nasi who ranks higher than the Abbasin. So that explains, up until now, Yehuda Ben Tabai outranks Shimon and Shatach, and therefore he's perfectly entitled to Paskin Halacha, not in Shimon and Shatach's presence. There's no issue of Moda Halacha Bifnei Rabbo. Now he's saying, though, that because I made such a terrible mistake, from now on, I'm not going to do that. I'm only going to pass kind of Shimon and Shatach as a ram. Ela, Yamat Rabbanon, but if you say this, Braisa is like the Chachamim. Ya'ami Yehuda Ben Tabai Abbasin, Shimon and Shatach Nasi. They say Yehuda Ben Tabai was the Abbasin and Shimon and Shatach was the Nasi. Well, then to begin with, Abbasin with Nasi, Yimoda Halacha. Since when is the Abbasin allowed to pass in Halacha in front of the Nasi? You're not allowed to pass in Halacha in front of your Rebbe. So the answer is loy, not necessarily. You could say the braisa goes according to the Chachamim, because my kibbol olav to come out, what does it mean? It says Yehuda Ben Tabai, who all along, according to the Chachamim, was the Av Beis Din, and therefore that he accepted that he's not going to pass in front of Shimon Shabbat. What do you mean? He couldn't pass it up until now either. It means it's Tirufi. It means he was saying, I'm not even going to combine together. Da'afilu, it's Tirufi, Nami, Lem, it's Tirifna. Before that, he would say, I could sit on a Beis Din even if Shimon and Shatach is not around. Now he's saying that as long as Shimon and Shatach is not around, like he's out of town or something, I'm not sitting on the Beis Din at all because I'm afraid I'm going to make a mistake and Shimon and Shatach is not going to be around, is not going to be allowed to correct.
Was that just Dinim Amunos and Dinim Nefashos, or just Dinim Nefashos?
Dinim Amunos, everything, I guess he's saying. Yeah.
But he made a mistake in Dinim Nefashos only.
Now he's concerned that maybe he's making mistakes in other things as well. I don't know. There is, by the way, the Meiri has a bit of a different explanation of the Gemara. Rashi is explaining that the question is, how was he able to pass an halacha up until now? If we say that he was the Av Beis Din and Shimon and Shatach is the Nasi, how was he able to pass an halacha up until now? And the answer is that now he's saying, up until now, he was able to do it. We were able to do it now when Shimon and Shatach was not there, but now. But up until then, in other words, if Shimon Shatach was out of town, let's say, then Yehuda Ben Tabai would feel free to sit on a Beis Din. Now we say not. The Meiri actually explains that it's the question was the other way around. How is Yehuda Ben Tabai saying, from now on, I'm only going to pass him when Shimon Shatach is around? That makes things worse. It means his Rebbe is around. He's not allowed to pass him Halacha in his presence. So what it means is, in other words, that he's saying that when Shimon Shatach is here, then I will join the Beis Din with Tarifna. I'll join together and we'll issue a halacha jointly. But without Shimon Shatach, I'm not around. I'm not even going to do that. Tosfos has a different explanation that it means. Let's say in the Beis Din, let's say Shimon Shatach says one thing and the other Chachamim are disagreeing. Yehuda Ben Tabai is saying, up until now, fine, I could vote against Shimon Shatach. He has his opinion. I have mine. now that this happened, I'm never again going to vote against him. Whatever he says, I'm going to vote with him because I realize that he knows a lot more than I do. Tosfos also mentions, by the way, from the Yerushalmi, that both opinions, both the mayor's and the Chachamim's opinions about which one was the Nasi and which one was the Avestim, both have support from stories that happened. Our story, you have like this, the Yerushalmi tells a story. When they wanted to appoint Yehuda ben Tabai as Nasi, he didn't want the position and he ran away to Egypt, to Alexandria. So they wrote a letter to Alexandria saying that my orus, my chosin is by you, and I'm stuck over here. So please send them back to me. In other words, if they're calling him the chosin, implies that he's the nasi, which is the leader of the entire Jewish people. If they're calling him arusi. On the other hand, when you have the story of Shimon Shaddach and the 80 witches, the famous story in Sanhedrin about the 80 witches that Shimon Shaddach judged and punished them, and the whole story over there, that implies that Shimon Shaddach was the nasi rather than the abbasim. There are historians who argue that maybe both of them are correct. Originally, Yehuda ben Tabai was the Nasi. After this story, we're saying not only did he accept on himself that he's not going to paskin in front of Shimon Shaddach without Shimon Shaddach around, whatever, but in fact, he resigned the Nasius and gave it over to Shimon Shaddach, and thus Shimon Shaddach became the Nasi and he became the Abbasid. And there are historians who argue like that. Okay, we said in the Mishnah, Hillel and Menachem lo nechlechu. We said Yotzei Menachem and Nichlas Shammai. We said that Hillel and Menachem did not argue over this point of smicha. Then Menachem went out and Shammai came in. So Laheichan Yotzei, where did Menachem go? So Abaye Amar Yotzei L'Chatar Busra. Abaye says he went off to bad ways. In other words, maybe in a something we used Tar Busra before about Acher, for example. So it means he went off the derech. Rava Amar Yotzei L'Avodas HaMelech. Rava says not so bad. He left learning Torah full time and went to work for the king. The Gemara says Tanya Nami Hochi. We learn in fact a braisa like that. Yotzei Menachem L'Avodas HaMelech. Menachem went out to work for the king. The king being Hurdus, the king of Eretz Yisrael, of the Jewish people at that time was Hurdus. So Menachem went and left the Sanhedrin and left full time learning Torah in order to work for Hurdus. The Yotzei Imah Shmonim Zugis Tamidim Levushin Sirikon, and together with him 80 pairs of Tamidim who were dressed in fancy clothes, in royal clothes, went out together with him to all go work for the government. That's a terrible thing that you have this many Talmid Chachamim that left and decided that we can't be bothered learning Torah full time anymore. I mean, maybe that's to be Malamed Zchus, and then maybe they figured, you know, who this is a Russia. We need as many people as possible that know their way around Torah, and maybe we can moderate his influence or whatever. But still, we're calling it a Yotza, that maybe it wasn't such a great thing. There is, by the way, an interesting thing Josephus mentions in his histories. He says that this Menachem. He actually says that Menachem was from a group called the Issyim, which is some people say they're the ones who wrote the Dead Sea Scroll. Josephus describes at some length that they lived out in the desert and they didn't have normal family lives and they stayed away from human society in general. So they weren't necessarily what a Yid is supposed to be. But anyway, he says that Menachem was one of them. And he says when Hurdus was much younger, Menachem had said the Ruach, with Ruach HaKodesh that he's one day going to be king. And now when Hurdus became king, then he honored Menachem greatly and appointed him as one of his ministers. So, but from here, from the Gemara, it seems he wasn't, from here, from the Mishnah, it seems pretty clearly he wasn't one of the Issyim. He was, in fact, a Frum Yid, unless we could say, I mean, maybe he hid it. Maybe he pretended all the years to be a Frum Yid, and now, in fact, he went, maybe that's what Abaye means, Yotzei L'Chatar B'Sra, that now he showed, after all, that now he showed his true colors. Whatever the case, he left, he's not even mentioned in Pirkei Avos among the Mekablei HaTorah, and Shammai came in instead and was one of the Mekablei HaTorah, one of the ones who taught, who learned the whole Torah from his Rebbeim and transmitted it to the following generation. Now, let's talk about the actual machloikis that they had. Amar of Shaman Ba'aba Amar of Yechonon, Lo'olam Altei Shvus Kalabeinah. You should never treat a Shvus, an Isur Drabbanan of Shabbos and Yom Tov casually. Because this whole concept why you shouldn't be able to do smicha on the animal on Yom Tov is only a matter of shavus. And yet the great people of each generation, the Nasi and the Abbasin of each generation, argued over it for generations on end. So you see that even a shavus you have to pay close attention to. Of course you have to pay attention to dinim d'rabbanan. What else would you think? The answer is shavus mitzvah. The chiddush is Rabbi Yechon is saying, even when the Shavuos even when the shvus affects the doing of a mitzvah, even when the shvus affects the doing of a mitzvah, as in this case, where smicha is a mitzvah, nevertheless, Rabbi Yechon is telling you, pay close attention to it. So the Gemara says, honami pshita. Okay, but isn't that also obvious? We know this is the shvus. We know it affects the doing of a mitzvah. So therefore, of course, obviously they're arguing about that. What else would we think? The answer is like this. In the Gemara in Beitza, the Gemara in Beitza has a much longer sugya about this whole topic of smicha on a korban on yomtov. In fact, they have a machlokas, the Shamav is full about it, which in fact we're going to learn that machlokas in the next mission. We're going to learn about that machlokas in the next Mishnah, but the Gemara in Beitza discusses it much more in detail. Anyway, there's a few ways of understanding the machlokas about smicha. One way of understanding it is that you don't have to do smicha in the first place on shlomim that you're required to bring, because the pasuk mentions smicha about shalmei nedava. When you bring a shlomim as a voluntary thing, then you have to do smicha on it. So the Gemara brings over there in Beitza one opinion, one braisa, that says that on a shalmei chayva you don't have to do smicha in the first place. Well, in that case, then of course you're not doing it on Yom Tov, because on Yom Tov because the Shami Chagiga that you're bringing is a korban that you're required to bring. Well, then in that case, then that has nothing to do with the shvus. That has to do with the korban itself. Midaraisa does not require Chagiga. So in that case, Rabbi Yechanan couldn't say always be careful about a shvus the mitzvah, because it wouldn't be a shvus the mitzvah. So therefore, so Rabbi Yechanan wants to tell us not like that opinion, and then the Gemara there over there brings a second possibility that the other reason why maybe you wouldn't do it on Yom Tov is because do you have to do the smicha right before the shechita? Beis Shammai eventually, and all the other nesiim and others based him before that, who held that you do not, they would hold that you don't have to do the smicha before the shechita. So fine, do it on Erev Yom Tov, don't do it on Yom Tov. As opposed to all the ones who held that you do have to, would hold you do have to. Well, then again, that's not a matter of a shvus. That's a matter of that they would say you could do it before Yom Tov. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan wants you to know, not like either of those, but rather like rather a third possibility, namely that they both agree that you have to do smicha on a shlomim, which is a choiva, and they both agree. And they both agree that it has to be done before the shechita, but they're saying, but the Shammai and all the chachamim before them are saying not to be samech, are saying nevertheless the chachamim made a gzera not to lean on an animal on Yom Tov, and therefore we're going to override that even though it's interfering with the mitzvah. So that's what Rabbi Yechanan wants you to know. So Rabbi Yechanan wants you to know, not like the opinions that say the machlokas is on the smicha itself. Do you bechlal have to do smicha on this korban because of the shlomim that you're required to bring? Or do you bechlal have to do smicha right before the shechita? Or could you do it erev Yom Tov? So no, kamash malon, Rabbi Yechanan wants to tell you that no, you do have to do it beforehand, or right before the korban is shechted, or b'shvus hudukligi, that the machlokas is actually on the matter of do we make a shvus override a mitzvah d'oraisa. So Omer Rami Bachama. So Rami Bachama says Shmamina. We see from that smicha b'chol koyche be'ina. When you're doing smicha, you have to do it with your full strength. It doesn't just mean that you put your hands on top of the animal's head. It means that you actually lean on it with your full strength, and therefore you're leaning on the animal and you're using the animal on Yom Tov. Because if you're going to say you don't need your full strength, my carbon, so what's the problem? There's no shvus of Yom Tov. Listen, go ahead and do smicha. The fact that Rabbi Yechanan is telling us there's a shvus not to, and that's why Yossi ben Yezer and Yeshua ben Prachya and so on and so forth are saying not to be smicha, shows that you have to do smicha b'chol koichet. So the Gemara says, basically, though, I have a contradiction on that. A braisa says that when the pasuk says "Dabra b'nei Yisrael v'samach," when the pasuk says "Speak to b'nei Yisrael," and a couple of psukim later it says that you should do smicha on the korban, that means b'nei Yisrael soinchin vein b'nei Yisrael soinchis, means only b'nei Yisrael, only Jewish men do smicha. Jewish women do not do smicha. On the other hand, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Shmuel, It says on the side of it here, which should really be Reb Shimon. All the other places in Shas where it brings this machlokes, it's Reb Shimon. Anyway, Reb Yosi and Reb Shimon say, "B'nois Yisrael Simchas Rishus." It's true that Jewish women don't have to do smicha, but they could do smicha if they want to. And Omer Reb Yosi, "Sochli Abba Elazar." And in fact, Reb Yosi says that Abba Elazar told me that could mean my father Elazar, or Bepashtus not, because Reb Yosi is Reb Yosi Reb Chalakta. So Bepashtus, it means an important Talmud Chacham by the name of Elazar. He told me, Pam achas hoyelonu egel shel zivcha shlomim. One time, now Reb Yosi is living after the Churban, but this Abba Elazar lived in the time of the Bismikdash. So we once had a calf of shlomim, ve'avinu le'ezras nashim. We brought it to the Ezras nashim, the samchu olav nashim, and the women did smicha on it. Not because they're required to, but in order to give them pleasure, in order that they should have the pleasure of knowing that they're participating in the korban. So now the question becomes: if you're telling me, Romi Bachoma, that smicha has to be with the person's full strength, Tosfos points out, by the way, this korban belonged to the women, so therefore needed. So therefore, even though they're the owner of and they don't have to do smicha, nevertheless, they wanted to give them a chance and have them do smicha. Rashi also, by the way, Tosfos also discusses that Rashi and Tosfos discuss in a few different places in Shas, can women do mitzvahs that they're not obligated in this case, for example, smicha? Is there, Rashi learns in some places that there might be a problem of Bal Tosif with it. And Tosfos is saying over here that no, we see from Al Gemara over here, the problem would be using Kodshim, not per se doing the Malacha. It's a famous Machloikas Rishonim, and it's Negea, for example, when you blow Shofar for women on Rosh Hashanah, when you have with women take Lulav on Sukkos, and so on and so forth, do they make a Bracha or not? Anyway, so here we're saying that they did, that the, so here we're saying they had the women do Smicha for Nachasurach, but the question is, B'Sakadaydach Smicha B'chol Koicha B'inan, if you're telling me that smicha has to be done with a person's full strength, what are you going to tell me? In order to give some women some pleasure that they should feel like they participated in the korban, we're going to allow them to do avoida, we're going to allow them to do work with the kodshim? To do smicha when it's not required is work with the kodshim. Doesn't that show that you don't need your full strength? You can just put your hands on it, which is not considered doing avoida, and that would be not like Rami Bahama. And the answer is, no, we can say like Rami Bachama that you do need your full strength. In this case, they're telling the women, don't do real smicha, just put your hands on top of the animal or lighten up your hands. Akfu means like lighten up. Hakilu yadechem, now she says make your hands light. Don't do so heavily on the animal's head, do it lightly so it's not real smicha. It says, Yihachi. Then what do you mean? You're saying that we had them do it even though there's no smicha in women. What do you mean? In that case, this isn't smicha. And typically, the animal smicha klal. It's not smicha at all. So Abba Elazar should be saying that we brought it to the Ezra's Nashim and the women didn't actually do smicha on it. The answer is you're right. The Braisa, Abba Elazar, is saying true statement. He's saying choda, you're less of a smicha klal. Number one, what they did was not real smicha anyway, because smicha is b'chol koicha, and this wasn't. But oid, and furthermore, today lasis nachas ruach anoshim. The reason why they allowed them to do it is to give them nachas ruach. Because anyway, what they did is not real smicha, so it's not avoid of a kodshim. So therefore, they didn't mind having them do it and let them feel that somehow they're participating in the korban. So it comes out, in other words, that. So it comes out, in other words, so Reb Yosi is saying Rishus Lanoshim Lismach, does he mean they can do full smicha, or does he only mean that they can do just putting their hands on top of the animal's head? It seems from the way we're saying over here, it sounds like Reb Yosi is agreeing that if women do it when they're not required to, it would be avoid of a conscience. And then when Reb Yehuda said, when the Tanakhama had said that B'nai Yisrael Semchim, then B'nai Yisrael Semchim, it would mean they're not even allowed to do that. Okay, so that's how Tosfos learned in some other places in Shas. So the Meiri understands the Gemara differently. That the Reb Yosi would say that it is a mitzvah. Therefore, you could say they did even full smicha. In that particular case, the Meiri learned, unlike Tosfos, it wasn't a korban that belonged to the women. It was a korban that belonged to their husbands. But still, lachas lachas noch lachas ruach lahem. They allowed them to participate by doing a light form of smicha. But according to the Meiri, if it was their korban, Reb Yosi would say they were in fact allowed to do full smicha. The Gemara continues, Amar Rav Shma Mina. Now we also see from what Rav Yechon is saying, Tzadin Asuru, that not only you're not allowed to ride on top of an animal or lean on top of an animal on Yom, but even the side of it is also on Yom or on Shabbat. The Isak that Tzadin Mutarin, if you're going to say you're allowed to use the sides of an animal, now there's a machloek, it's about that point in the Masechta Shabbos. But we can see from Rav Yechon's statement clearly that you can't use the sides either. Because if it's allowed, then what's the problem? You can do smicha on the side because the head of the animal is in effect like the side. You don't ride on the head of the animal. So the fact that you can't, so doesn't that demonstrate that even to lean on the sides of the animal is also? On the other hand, Rav Ashi says that's not a proof. You could even say that the sides are mutter normally, but called the bahadi gaba, the gaba dummy, but anything on the same level as the back of the animal is considered like the back. And since the animal's head is basically in a straight line with its back, so therefore it's also considered part of its back, and you couldn't do smicha on it. But let's say, for example, to use the actual side of the animal, like the flank of the animal, like to lean against it, or to use the tail or something like that, that shouldn't be mutter. On Shabbos or Yom Tov, not necessarily can you prove that from what we're saying over here. Okay, I mean, the halacha is, in fact, Tosfos points out, the halacha is, Rav Ashi himself holds in the Sugya and Shabbos, that it is also to use the tzadin as well. He's just saying you can't prove it from here. The Mishnah says, let's start the Mishnah and we'll do some of the Gemara on it, seeing as how today's daf was officially supposed to be daf Yud Zayin. The Mishnah says, Beit Shama'im, Beit Shama'im, Mevi'in Shlomim Ve'ein Semchin Aleihem. Beit Shama'im says, you can bring Shlomim on Yom Tov, because afterward you can eat the Shlomim, but you can't do Smicha on them because we just said that Shama'i himself held you can't, and Beit Shama'i followed him in that. But the Shammai says you can't bring oilus at all on Yom Tov. Obviously, the Kavanah Tzibur, yeah, but we're talking about oilus that are brought by individuals, not because you could bring them after Yom Tov. And Lachem V'loy L'Gavoya, the Pasuk says you can do Malacha on Yom Tov where it's for you, but not where it's for Hashem, not where it's being offered on a Mizbeach. Or and then Mevi'in Shlomim V'Oilus, the same kind of Leim. But Hillel says no, you could bring Shlomim and oilus, and you could do Smicha on them. So in other words, the double machlokas. Number one, Beis Hillel holds you can bring the oilus, where Beis Shammai said you can't. Number two, we said in the previous Mishnah that Shammai, and now we're saying Beis Shammai said you can't do smicha even on the shlomim on Yom Tov, and Beis Hillel is saying that you can. So there's a long sugya about this in Beitza. Here, the Gemara here, Tosfos points out because the Mishnah is really being just brought incidentally. Over there, because we're talking about the dinim of Chagiga, but the main dinim of Malacha and Yom Tov are dealt with in Masech the Beitza. Therefore, you have a long sugi over there that discusses the ins and outs of Beis Shammai's opinion. Here, we're going to focus more on the fact that here we're not going to focus on that part of the Mishnah. We're going to focus on the next part of the Mishnah, which is going to talk about what we do with Shavuos. Where Shavuos, after all, is only one day. So the Mishnah continues. By the way, the Alter Rebbe mentions in Shulchan Aruch that even though the halacha is like this Hillel, as it usually is, nevertheless, in this regard, mostly Beis Hillel and most of the Jewish people followed Beis Shammai, and therefore, as we're going to say in the continuation of the Mishnah, that mostly they did not bring the korbanos on Yom Tov, but rather after Yom Tov. There's a sicha in Chelek Chav Ches, where the Rebbe analyzes where the Alter Rebbe gets it from and why Beis Hillel did that. And in particular, the Rebbe discusses the idea, since we're going to talk over here about the Mishnah, about Yom Tvoyach, the day after Shavuos, which in Eretz Yisrael, of course, the day after Shavuos, Yisrochag, is Zayin Sivan, not like for us in Chutz La'aretz, where it's Ches Sivan. Zayin Sivan has a particular mila in that there's an opinion that the Torah was given on that day, and therefore this and that Hosef Moshe Yom Echad Midaito, and therefore by Shavuos, more than any other Yom Tov, Beis Hillel, practically speaking, even though they held you could bring the korbanos on Yom Tov, in practice they would mostly bring them after Yom Tov, and therefore, it's Alter Rebbe explains in Shulchan Aruch. Therefore, we have the minhag that we don't say tachnun during the few days after Shavuos, the Yemei Tashlumin, as we're going to talk about in the Gemara. But that's a minhag. But me'ikir adin, you're not allowed to on Yisrochag because that was Yom Tovoyach, as the Mishnah is going to say, that was the day when they brought most of the korbanos that people would have had to bring on Shavuos itself. So the Mishnah continued, Atzeres Shechalvius be'erev Shabbos, if Shavuos comes out on Erev Shabbos, Beis Shammai Yom Tvoyach Achar HaShabbos. So Beis Shammai says you can't bring the korbanos on Shavuos itself. Therefore, the day of Shechtin, the Korbanos, is going to be after Shavuos. It's going to be on Zion Sivan. Rashi holds that we're talking about the Olos, of course, he said, as well as the Korbanos Chagiga. Tosfos says maybe the Chagigas you could bring on Yom Tov. After all, according to the Shammai, you're allowed to bring Shlomim on Yom Tov. We just said. So Tosfos discusses. Maybe Beshame would say that, does it mean that Beshame would say that you could bring the Chagigas on Yom Tov, or maybe they're only talking about the Shame Simcha, the Korbanos that you have to bring in order to eat meat of a Korban and be Mesameach on Yom Tov, as we learned before. Maybe those are the only ones Beshame is saying you can bring on Yom Tov. Maybe they would say the Chagigah also you have to bring after Yom Tov. Anyway, so they're saying Yom Tvoyach, the day of Shechting, these Korbanos that you couldn't bring on Yom Tov is the day after Yom Tov. I skipped the line in the Mishnah. Atzeres Shechali is the Erev Shabbos. So if Atzeres of Shavuos comes out on Erev Shabbos, Beshama Omen Yom Tvoyach Acher Shabbos. So Beshama says the Yom Tvoyach is going to be the day after Shabbos. So you can't bring them on Erev Yom Tov itself, because Yom Tov, and Beshama says you can't bring them on Yom Tov. You can't bring them on Shabbos, obviously. Therefore, by elimination, the only thing you can do is bring them on Sunday. Whereas Basilel says not, you could bring them on Friday, which was Yom Tov. Now both the Shama and Basilel agree, Shim Chol Olias B'Shabbos, that if Shavuos comes out on Shabbos itself, nowadays it can't, but in those times it could, Shiyom Tvoyach Achar Shabbos, they both agree that Yom Tvoyach is after Shabbos, because of course you can't bring private Korbanos on Shabbos. And the Mishnah continues, Ein Kohen Gadol Mislabish V'Kelav, on that day, if they'd have the Yom Tvoyach on Sunday, the Kohen Gadol does not wear his special clothes. Rashi says it means in general, the Kohen Gadol does not wear Yom Tov clothes or Shabbos clothes on that day for reasons that we're going to talk about in a minute. Tosfos says it doesn't mean that. It means the Kohen Gadol does not wear his Bigdei Kohuna. Usually on Yom Tov, but obviously we know the only time the Kohen Gadol has to do the Avodah is Yom Kippur. Nevertheless, practically speaking, on Yom Tov, usually the Kohen Gadol would make an appearance and do the Avodah wearing his Bigdei Kohuna, his 8 clothes, but in this particular case, when Yom Tvoyach is on Sunday, he would not do that. And Umutorin behest would have attained. And furthermore, on that day, even though it's Yom Tvoyach, you're allowed to fast and you're allowed to make a spadim and you're allowed to fast. Shaloi l'kayim divra omen, because we dafka do not want to uphold the words of those who say, the tzedukim who say, atzeres achar Shabbos, that Shavuos is always Sunday. And if we see, like this, they're bringing all the korbanos on Sunday. So if we also have the Kohen Gadol who's wearing special Yom Tov Dikah clothes, or his 8 clothes, as Tosfos says, and that we're not doing Hesped B'tainis, they're going to say, hey, look at that. Everybody agrees that atzeres is supposed to be on Sunday, that Shavuos is supposed to be on Sunday, rather than on Vav Sivan, or on the 50th day of Sfira, like it's supposed to be. So therefore, bedafka, we do not like that in order to demonstrate that it's not Yom Tov. So the Gemara starts off. Amar Rav Elazar, Amar Rav Oshia, minayim la'atzeres sheyesh la tashlumin kol shiva. How do we know that Shavuot, you have tashlumin, you can bring the korbanos throughout the 7 days, throughout the 6 days after it, in other words? We learned previously in the first parak that you can bring the korbanos throughout Pesach and throughout Sukkot. How do we know the same thing applies to Shavuot? Shenema b'chaga matzis, b'chaga Shavuot, b'chaga Sukkot. Because the pasuk puts them all together in one pasuk. Makesh chaga shavuos chaga matzis. So therefore, it makes a hekesh between shavuos and Pesach. Ma chaga matzis yesh tashlumin kol shiva. Just like chaga matzis has tashlumin the entire 7 days, as we learned before, because we said because Pesach is 7 days long, and we learned in the first parak that since it says chagoyim chag l'Hashem shivat yomim, then it means you have the entire 7 days to bring it. So the same thing applies to Shavuos. The Gemara asks, "Ve'im ma'akish l'chagas sukkos?" So why not say that the hekesh is with sukkos? Ma sukkos, ma chagas sukkos yesh l'tashlumin kol shmoina. Af chagas Shavuos yesh l'tashlumin kol shmoina. That just like sukkos, you have 8 days, because we learned in the first parak, you have shmini atzeres as well. Maybe chagas Shavuos, you should have one extra day. And the answer is no, shmini regular b'nei atzmei. No, because the 8th day, shmini atzeres, is a separate yom tov of its own. It's not part of Shavuos. So therefore, we can't say that when we're learning from Shavuos that we're learning from Sukkot to Shavuos that we should also learn from Shmini Atzeres. The Gemara says, "Emo da'ami Shmini Ragbuk Ne'atmahu." You know what? When do we say that Shmini is Ragbuk Ne'atmah? Hanimila the in Pazar Kashav is only as far as the 6 things where the acronym is Pazar Kashav. We learned them most recently in Tainus. where you have, so pay stands for pious. There's a separate, during the days, during the 7 days of Sukkot, they don't need a pious to determine which mishmaris bring which korbanas, because they have a rotation over there, because there's many korbanas. But on Shmini Atzeres, you only have 10 korbanas tzibur, then you have 24 mishmaris, so you have to make a pious to determine who brings what. Zion stands for Zman, namely that we say separate Shechyonu on that day. Reish stands for Regel. Rashi says it means it's called a Regel by itself. It's not called Sukkot. In Davening, we call it Shmini Atzeres HaChagazeh. Kuf stands for Korban. The Korban of Shmini Atzeres is not in the same sequence as the ones from the previous days of Sukkot. It's a separate kind of Korban, like the kind that you bring on other Yom Tovim, Parachot, Ayolachot, etc., unlike the rest of the days of Sukkot, where you're bringing 14 sheep and a varying number of Purim, and so on and so forth. That's cool. Shin is shear, which means that you have a separate shear of Shmini Atzeres. That's nothing to do with the topics of the shiris of Sukkot. We learned previously throughout Yom Tov Sukkot, the shir shoyim every day. We learned from the Sefer Sukkah has to do with Matnas Aniyim, has to do with making sure to give the Matnas Aniyim that this is the time of year when you're bringing in your produce from the field, and therefore be careful to give the Matnas Aniyim and not steal it from them. Shmini Atzeres, on the other hand, has a korban of its own, a shear of its own that has nothing to do with that theme. And Beis stands for bracha, meaning that they would give the king a bracha as a zecher of Shlomo HaMelech by the Chanukah Sabayis, because as we learned in the first parak of Or Masechta, in the first parak of Moed Cotton, they had the Chanukah Sabayis for 7 days, then they had the 7 days of Sukkot, and then on Shmini Atzeres, they gave the king a bracha and left. Tosfos disagrees over here and in some other places in Shas on a couple of these things. Regel b'fnei atzmai includes the idea that regel b'fnei atzmai means that you need lina, you have to stay over in Yerushalayim the night after you bring your karbanos. Tosfos Rashi elsewhere explains it means you don't sit in the sukkah. Rabbi Hananel has an explanation that it means that as we learned in Moed Cotton, that it cancels the avet, that cancels shloshim. Shira b'fnei atzmai, Tosfos says, means throughout the rest of Sukkot, they would only do a half a kapitel at a time. Here they do a complete kapitel. Bracha b'fnei atzmai, Tosfos says, means that we say Shmini Atzeres HaChagazeh, which is what Rashi said was regal. Anyway, the point is, you have these things in which, you have these factors in which Shmini Atzeres is considered a korban of its own. Avala in Tashlumin, but when it comes to Tashlumin of Korbanos, Tashlumin derishinu. We know that Shmini Atzeres is Tashlumin of the first day. It's not, as we learned in the first parak of Or Masechta. Mishlechag v'yom tov rishon shel chag, chogeg is kol haregel. If you didn't bring the korban chagiga on the first day Yom Tov, you can bring it anytime during the Yom Tov, v'yom tov achron, and the last day, Shmini Atzeres. So why shouldn't we compare Shavuos to Sukkot and say that you have 8 days rather than 7? And the answer is, tafasta, merubalei tafasta. If you try to grab too much, you don't grab anything. Tafasta more, tafasta. But if you grab a little bit, then you have. In other words, if you have to compare to 7 days versus to eight, take seven, because for sure it includes seven. You can't necessarily show that it should include eight. If you want to show that it's eight, you have to be able to prove it. As opposed to seven, no matter what, eight includes seven. So the Gemara asks, Elo l'may hilchos akast v'rachmano l'chagas sukkos. Well, then why does the Torah mention sukkos in this pasuk? We know already of the Shabbos Regalim. They mentioned the sukkim before. The fact that it puts them all in one pasuk is meant for a hekesh. If sukkos is not part of the hekesh, what is it doing over there? The answer is akush l'chagam matzis. The answer is we're making a hekesh between chagam matzis, Pesach, and chagas sukkos, Shavuot. Namely, ma chagam matzis, tolin lina. Just like when you come to Yerushalayim to bring your korbanos for Pesach, you have to stay overnight on Motzei Yom Tov. You don't leave directly that night. You wait until the next day. Af Chagas Sukkos Tolin Lina. The same way when you come to bring your korbanos for Sukkot, you have to stay overnight. And V'hosem Menalon. And in turn, by Pesach itself, where do we know you have to do that? Yichtiv Ufonisav Aboker V'olach D'loy Alach. Because the pasuk says that you turn around in the morning, which is Chol HaMoed, and you go back to your houses, to your tents, to your houses. So in other words, we see that you can't leave on that night. Now Rashi points out, it can't mean Baboiker, it can't mean the morning of Yom Tov, because Yom Tov, you can't travel anyway, therefore necessarily it means the morning of Chol HaMoed. Tosfos disagrees and says, look, I mean, you don't necessarily have Tchumen min HaTorah. Rabbi Akiva holds that Tchumen min HaTorah, the Chachamim disagree, but fine. So the point is that it means you don't leave that night, the point is it means you leave the next day. Tosfos over here discusses maybe there is a Daraisa, a tomb of 12 million. In some other places, Rashi and Tosfos discuss maybe what you could do is conceivably you could have left to a place within the tomb during Yom Tov, and then after Yom Tov, you'd continue traveling the rest of the way home. And the Pasuk is telling you, don't do that. The bottom line is that we see that Pesach, we need Lina, and therefore in turn, we learn from that to Sukkot, that Sukkot also requires Lina. And so it applies to all three Yom Tov. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Ves Hashem, talking about how that point about Shavuos having Tashlumin, how that relates back to our Mishnah. One thing worth mentioning, by the way, that Rebbe pointed out in a Sicha once, why Taka does the Torah do it that way? Why doesn't it tell us Tashlumin of Shavuos straight out? And the reason is because Shavuos is connected with the Torah, which is higher than the world, and therefore that's why it's not 7 days. It doesn't need to be the 7 days of creation like the other ones. But we learn it from Pesach and Sukkot, which represent the Avodah of the Tzaddik and the Baal Teshuva, respectively, that therefore we learn from them to Shavuos. In other words, we have Torah Shabbat Peh, rather than learning from Torah Shabbat Sabbath, a year that it usually does, learns from the Avodah of the Tzaddik and the Baal Teshuva, how it should be with Torah, how it should be with Shavuos, which is all about the Torah.
Okay, 6:45 tomorrow.